This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Carolina Numa with you on the evening edition. It's 6:47 p.m. Our next story is about housewives and EPF.
Yep. So this has been on the table for a little while, but apparently the implementation of the EPF salary deduction for a husband with more than one wife is currently being fine-tuned by the EPF and SOCSO. And this is according to our Deputy Prime Minister, Dr. Wan Azizah Wan Ismail. And so it feels as though we're inching closer to a solution.
Yes, you said on the table for a while. Actually, it was part of one of her first announcements from one of her first press conferences. So, yeah, right from when she took office.
Yeah, but she mentioned this, I think, and that's when it came up, right? So if you have more than one wife, how does that work? Because currently the 2% deduction from the husband's salary and 50 ringgit government contribution is only for the first wife. And, you know, we have talked about this quite a few times, not landing on anything specifically. So when you say fine tune, I feel like you're almost there.
I was going to say, when she first mentioned about, you know, what about the second wife and the third wife, when we first spoke about this a couple of months ago, we had a good laugh about it. But no, it's very serious.
It is. Very it serious. Is indeed.
Let's cross over now to Rosanna Issa, the Executive Director at Sisters in Islam. Rosanna, thanks for joining us on the program. Now, it sounds like there are details that still need to be ironed out with the implementation of this EPF contribution for housewives, particularly in polygamous marriages. So let's take a few steps back. Can we start briefly with how the concept of polygamy in Islam began?
Okay. First thing, what I would like to highlight is actually the practice of polygamy did not begin in Islam. I think it's a practice of many communities and societies even before Islam came into the picture. So it is not unique to Islam. There were other communities and societies that practice this. And if anything, what happened with the issue of polygamy in Islam is when Islam came, it actually limited the practice of polygamy from multiple wives to a maximum of four wives. So even when the verse was revealed to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he also had to break the news to his community to say that, you know, you are only allowed a maximum of four wives, and that you will have to divorce the others, and you will have to choose and select which are the wives that you divorce and which are the wives that you will retain. The other thing that I would like to highlight is in relation to the verse in the Quran itself, where it says the calling, you know, in relation to the practice of polygamy, you know, justice, equality and fairness is a value that must be upheld, and the wives are to be treated well and to be maintained equally. And therefore, if, you know, you feel that you cannot do justice, then it is best to marry only one.
Right, Rosanna, in your experience when dealing with polygamous, I guess, marriages in Malaysia, is it generally practiced fairly and equally?
The lived reality is that because we have done a study on this whereby in the year 2012, you know, we had from the years 2007 to 2012, we did a national survey on the impact of polygamy in Muslim families in Malaysia. It's a collaborative research between Sisters in Islam and researchers from UKM, USM and UM. And we had interviewed about 1,200 over respondents, of which 222 are husbands, 260 are first wives, 231 of second wives, and 332 of children of first wives, and 192 of children of second wives. Yeah, and this study was conducted in all the states in Peninsula Malaysia. Now, the findings is that most polygamous husbands could not fulfill financial and the turn-taking demands, which is, you know, the financial demands are actually, you know, and the time with the family is actually the foundations of a firm marriage. So 40% of husbands intentionally reduced monetary contributions to their children and their wives and towards the household expenditure after engaging in polygamy. On top of that, 44% of first wives started working longer hours to supplement the family income. And 64% of first wives said their husbands had not complied to the turn-taking agreements, and that 77% of children of first wives were unhappy with their father's time allocation.
Wow, there is a lot there to unpack. But if we were to focus on providing financial support, are there enough procedures in place to verify whether a man can provide financially before taking on another wife?
Yeah, so here's the thing. You know, with the research that we did, the study that we did, it is found that the Sharia courts rarely investigate whether a husband is capable of material provision. And husbands were also not required to show proof of their financial stability. So 45% of husbands did not submit applications to become polygamous to the court. So that's number one problem. You know, they're not even admitting that they're wanting to enter into a polygamous marriage. And additionally, 50% of husbands said that no financial or health documents were also asked by the courts. So this is actually a matter of concern because, you know, it's one thing having the laws and provisions there, but, you know, in terms of implementation, it's very obvious that we're not tightening the reins on the practice of polygamy to ensure that, you know, any polygamous marriages are being entered into in a manner that, you know, would not bring detriment to the first wives and the family, as well as to the subsequent wives.
Right. Can a wife under Sharia law demand for certain provisions?
Yes, she can make these demands. I mean, you know, it's within her right, you know, to expect maintenance from the husband in relation to shelter, food, clothing, education, recreation, of holidays, you know, of the wife and the children. So, you know, it's your normal day-to-day demands. So it is not unreasonable. And it's her right within the Sharia to demand for them.
And does Sisters in Islam welcome the implementation of this EPF salary deduction? I mean, how beneficial do you think it will be, especially in addressing the current gaps in the procedure for polygamous marriages?
Definitely, I think, you know, never mind a polygamous marriage. I think the reality is that even women in monogamy or families that are, you know, a husband and a wife, you know, the experience is that, you know, wives are also not receiving maintenance. This results in, you know, very difficult situation. And I think it's a reasonable policy to have to ensure that the wife actually gets something. Because, you know, we're talking about a long-term saving here. A wife, you know, especially one who doesn't work outside of the home, you know, where she's a homemaker full-time, what guarantees are there for her that, you know, there will be a sum of money that, you know, she can, you know, will be able to live her old age in, you know, a manner that's comfortable, where she doesn't have to worry about, you know, your day-to-day needs. And that in a way as well, you know, if there's health issues, that at least, you know, there's a sum of money that she can tap into.
Yeah, definitely. So at the moment, the EPF contribution is only set, like we said a little earlier, for the first wife. If we were to adhere to the Islamic principles of providing and caring equally for all, should the EPF deduction then be allocated, the same EPF deduction then be allocated to all wives?
Okay, so here's the thing with this EPF contribution. It is not just the husband that is contributing. It is also the government that's contributing as well. So in addition to the 2% that's being taken from the husband, the government is contributing 50 ringgit on top of the 2%. Now, here's the thing. Polygamy is not a practice that should be encouraged by the government. And given the lived realities of polygamous practice, why would the government want to be complicit to a life of misery for women as a policy? I mean, why should government funds be expended to benefit the families of a Muslim man twice or three times or four times more than a non-Muslim man? So the hardship of a first wife who is not treated fairly by the husband should not be further exacerbated by the government providing further support to a husband's subsequent marriages. Mm. So that's our position.
Does there then need to be a larger review of the current laws on polygamy in general then?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, in relation to the laws on polygamy, we definitely recommend, you know, further monitoring and tightening of the practice of polygamy, refining further the existing laws and improving the enforcement of these laws. I mean, as we have seen, in the case of that child marriage by the man in Kelantan to the Thai wife. You know, there's a lot of loopholes here that needs to be tightened up, you know, and obviously if these implementation is, you know, if our government is not serious about the implementation, then, you know, Muslim men are just going to take further advantage. And, you know, those who want to practice polygamy will always see, you know, that there's a way for them to do it without being accountable, without the sanctions, you know, that should be imposed on him. Because even for someone who practices polygamy without the permission of the court, I mean, the fine, the maximum fine is only 1,000 ringgit, which is hardly a deterring factor.
No, it isn't at all. Thank you very much, Rosanna. That was Rosanna Issa, the executive director at Sisters in Islam, sharing her views on polygamy in this day and age. Tame Impala now, Disciples on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.